You are listening to The Wizards of Oz, hosted by Isaac Egan, Rangor, and Rob CJ.
It's the 19th of March, 2015. I'm your host, Rob CJ, and welcome to The Wizards of Oz. With me tonight is the soon-to-be Isaac Lee. Welcome.
Oh, yeah, this is the first...
Yes!
So I managed to convince Wonchin to agree to marry me, and I've informed her that there's no taxis backsies, so it's pretty much locked.
Cool. So was it decided by a game of magic where you crushed her?
No.
I feel like that would have been a better story, like, if you beat me, you don't have to marry me.
No, it was, she top aided a PDQ in Adelaide, and I was like, all right, well, I guess you've ticked all the boxes now. I better propose. Yeah.
And then you had the top 8-1?
I had not top 8. She top 8-1 in the season before I did.
You realised you had to lock her down before she realised she could do better.
I taught her everything she knows.
So tell us everything. Tell us the circumstances of you.
So I actually started organising it back in like February. It's the reason why I sold my vintage collection. And then we went over to Paris and, went to a really nice restaurant and I proposed and she said yes. Got a little bit teary and stuff. It was great. We traveled around Europe for like a month, doing touristy stuff. I played in a PDQ in Italy, which was pretty cool. Very different. Now we're back and, Wonchin's pretty much organizing the wedding and I'm not doing much at all.
And you've heard a couple of other voices with us. Of course, there's Rangel.
You are Chester Swords.
No, I'm not.
You are Maitland Cameron. Welcome.
How's it going?
So with us tonight, we've got the second runner-up of Nationals 2010. We've got fourth place in Sydney GP last year. And, of course, second on the weekend at the GP Auckland. Welcome, Maitland Cameron.
Hey, how's it going?
Let's just get straight into it. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, it was certainly a big weekend. It was actually bigger than I expected it to be. I was thinking it was going to be sort of 200 to 300 person, and it was closer to four, as far as I remember. I think 380 or something. So it was good to see a lot of people there. It wasn't as big as Tim Hughes when we were on the way there. I asked him how big he thought it was going to be, and he said 1,000. And I don't know where he got that from. he argued with me the whole bus ride.
The official numbers was 386, which was only 100 more than the last GP in Auckland. You know, does Auckland deserve GPs?
No, like, I mean, I was...
I was to all our New Zealand fans out there, Rob is not saying that you are scum. He is simply suggesting that maybe there's not enough for you to have a whole GP to yourself.
And then when I started playing Magic in Tasmania, I had to deal with the fact that it was just as we stopped getting PTQs. So I had to deal with the fact that we weren't big enough to get PTQs. And I think Auckland has to deal with the fact that they're just not big enough to get GPs.
Yeah, that's fair. Although, like,
go take your PTQ.
Do you know that I played Maitland in the final of that PTQ down in Tasmania? When I say played, I mean I offered a prize redistribution in which first place gets the invite and second place gets the cash and the box. And he snap took the box.
Crashed it too.
Yeah, was it any good?
Oh, I just remember the rush.
So good. I want this box and I'm going to open it right now. in front of you.
That was a good pick here.
How many rounds did you play? Three?
I played five. Five rounds in total. That's including the
including
top eight.
Top 8, yeah. I'm not surprised.
It was 3-0 ID, 2-0, and then Maitland scooped me.
How long ago would that be, Maitland?
4-5 years, something like that, I guess.
Okay.
That's a long time ago. Was that like one of your first PDQs or something? Like,
It might have been my second, but it could have been the first.
I remember Nick Rolfe Yeah, I remember him describing you as his protege and that you were going to be very good someday.
Yeah.
You got like a bunch of good results and, you know, second in JP. How many Pro Tours have you played in now?
I've done two, so Vancouver will be my third.
Okay, cool.
Well, let's go back to this GP. Like, tell us how you got to the final. Obviously winning games, but how'd you go day one? How was your pool like?
Well, day one really was Friday for me because I don't get to play in many real-life Magic events, so I was rocking zero buys, and I was trying to remedy that by doing some grinders, and I did not win a game in the two grinders that I played, so that was
good start.
Fantastic. And I had to deal with about 40 people asking me why I didn't have any buys. That was pretty fantastic. And, like, assuring me that I must have some buys. When we sat down for sealed, and I was actually sitting a couple of seats down from Sammy Brent, and I got the pool that he registered, and after building my deck, I sort of walked up to him. He was like, "Your deck's awesome," and I was like, "Yeah, it's pretty good." And yeah, I was lucky enough to open quite a few on-color rares. I had a Mardu deck that was it was pretty aggressive, which is a really good place to be in this format because everyone sort of goes 3-4 color mid-rangey, and then there's like control decks to beat the mid-rangey decks, and if you can go under them all, then it's a really good way to get an edge.
Yeah, I think Chester described your deck as Mardu constructed, or
yeah, the pre-constructed Mardu deck. Yeah, he definitely had some opinions on my sealed opening skills.
Yeah, for sure. So you went X1 day one, is that right?
Yeah, I went X1, which I was obviously very happy with. Yeah, it was good.
I saw that Mulch went XO.
He did, yeah.
And was Wolfie XO as well?
I think it was X1. Mulch was X1.
Wolfie was X1, yeah.
Yeah, Mulch was X1 as well at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one XO player. I can't remember who it was. But there were a bunch of people doing really well on day one. I beat Jason Chung in the last round to knock him from XO, and PJAX was X1 as well, I think. And
there's a couple of people that mized in on X3 as well, which was...
Not Jim Wilkes.
Which was hilarious.
It indicates how small the GP is when some people get in on X3.
People are like, there were people who'd lost the first three and they're like, "Do you think I can get in?" And I'm like, "Some X3s are going to make it, but it's not going to be you, buddy. It's probably time for you to just drop."
I remember like halfway through the day, Simon Harden like read the pairings and he's like, "Downstairs, yes!" Like halfway through the day. Upstairs tables were pretty much like, you know, the people that were like, because it was based on your standings or whatever. So, yeah, if you're upstairs, you're on the bottom tables. Halfway through the day, pretty happy to be downstairs for the first time.
I had a sweet moment in round one, actually, where we sat down and we sort of shuffle up and then the game starts and I play a Windswept Heath on turn one. And my opponent looks excited and goes, "Well, at least you opened money."
Yep, $10.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, this trip is basically positive for me now.
So what do you walk away with, second place? What does that give you?
2,700 US, six pro points, I think. Plus
that's
the
awesome. That's like 10,000 Australian.
It is not that far off.
plus return airfares to Vancouver?
Yep.
Is it? That's some next level goodness.
It is, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Feels good on your body? Does it feel good on your body?
Yeah. Yeah. After DC, I just wanted to get back on the PT as fast as I could, and it's nice to have done that.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure.
So what were your draft pods like on day two?
It was actually pretty cool because because I didn't have any buyers, my breakers were just awful. And that meant that even though I was X1, I was in the second draft pod, which meant that I dodged Wilfie and Mulch and PJAX. all the really good players. Yeah, PJAX, all the good players that were doing really well. And I didn't know anyone, I don't think, in my first draft pod. Although Fabian Dickman might have been there, and I just didn't know who he was. They were probably good players. I didn't know who it was, but it wasn't like an incredibly strong draft pod, so that was nice. And what did I draft? All right, the first draft I was I went blue red. It was actually I had the worst because I'm sure you guys are aware of this set. A lot of people say about how powerful the rares are.
Yep.
Which I don't think is necessarily a big issue or problem, or whatever. But that's a different story. But my first pack I had a terrible rare, and actually all the cards in it were terrible. I ended up taking a Swiftwater Cliffs, and the second pick would have been Whisperer of the Wilds. That was how bad the pack was. So I was pretty worried after that. But then I got past a Flame Wake Phoenix, the one red Haste Phoenix, and I took that and ended up in blue red tempo-y aggressive, which I was very happy with because I think that deck's really strong.
You mentioned before that Fabian Dickman was in your pool and he ended up getting the top 8 as well. Is he somebody that we should know about?
I think he's one, he runner up or something at a GP in Germany, but other than that, I don't think he's that well known.
Right.
I think he's got another GP top 8 or win as well. I think he had 2 or 3
okay. GP
top 8s, but he was a nice guy too.
Yeah, he was a nice guy. I talked to him as well. He was quite good as well. He played really well.
Because you day 2'd as well, didn't you, Isaac?
Yes, I was one of those sneaky X3s.
So what did you draft in your first draft?
Oh, I first picked a Torrent Elemental and then ended up in this really, really good blue-black deck that splashed green for three of the morph, 3/4 guys, the abhorrent, the abominations, abomination of something.
Gadul.
Yeah. And I got beaten round one. Cause dude bounced my creature and then attacked me and then bounced my creature and attacked me and then like flipped up his 2/2 guy that bounces my creature and attacked me. And then he went like Will Wake and bounced 2 of my creatures and attacked me. And then he played an Aven Surveyor and bounced my creature and attacked me. And it was just I played like the same 2 creatures every turn from like turns like 3, 4, 5, and 6 or something. It was quite frustrating. Yeah, it was a good game.
So was that your only loss in the first draft, Isaac?
Yeah, I went 2-1.
Okay. And how'd you end up, Malin?
Yeah, I went 2-1 as well. I've gone 2-1 in every draft I've done of this format at a professional level.
Right. The big man's back. Did you day 2, Ringle?
No, I didn't. I played the Get Fucked Up game on the second day. It was awesome. I was wrecked beyond all belief. So.
All right. So, Malin, how did your second draft go?
I was pretty unsure how it went because I haven't really drafted the Sultai Self Mill or like Delve Enabler deck before. And so I sort of wasn't sure about some of the commons I was taking and if I was making the right decisions and in deck building, if I was making the right sort of last few choices. And so after the draft finished, I had to run around the venue trying to find Sam Loy and ask him if my deck was any good. And after playing the first round, I was amazed at how good it was. That deck is just so sweet. When your Mind Rots are also a Black Lotus for your Gurmag Anglers, it is a thing of beauty.
Wow. Yeah, for sure. So what did you first pick to go into that deck?
I know what I first picked in my second draft. Crux of Fate.
Come on, rare.
Crux of Fate, followed by Channel Harm.
Man, I'm really confused here, Isaac, because this was a question I was supposed to ask Maitland. So what's the story here?
So the story is that at an undisclosed Pro Tour, an undisclosed Australian player, name of Sam Loy, opened a pack and was presented with the draft decision of first picking either Crux of Fate or the All-Star Uncommon Channel Harm. And he decided to take Channel Harm out of that pack. And
Because it kills multiple creatures.
Because it kills multiple creatures.
I'm not sure if that's the actual reason, but that's the reason that people have made up.
It was something that was said at one point by Sam Loy. And it was the biggest thing was that, like, sure, that pick's terrible, but Sam sort of like stuck to it a bit, and because he stuck to it and tried to justify it, people sort of went on about it for however long it's been.
They're still going on about it. And I lost my shit because, yeah, like, I went first pick Cracks of Fate, second pick Channelheim. And in the end, I ended up playing a deck that had Channelheim in it, like a black-white deck. I was playing Channelheim, but I was not playing Crux of Fate. It was in my board.
I'm really out of touch with this format. We just don't do any drafting. We're sealed out here. I don't even know what Channelheim is. So what is that?
5 and a white. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to you and permanents you control this turn. If damage is prevented this way, you can have that damage redirected to target creature. So six mana,
very strong.
Six mana, like fog everything and kill your dude, like a removal spell and fog at the same time. Yeah. But it's like a super fog because your creature still deal damage. So,
and how did it work for you?
Yeah, it was very good. I also sided in Crux of Fate like every game, but it was one of those things that was really good. Like Crux of Fate wouldn't have been that great game one.
Yeah,
because I aggroed all my opponents game one. And then games, you know, like sideboarded games, they realized that I was really aggressive and tried to like compensate and, you know, like putting in lower creatures and stuff like that and playing a bit more conservatively. And then every now and then they like would stabilize and have me almost beat, but I actually am just sandbagging two creatures in a Crux of Fate. So.
So we'll go back to the question. Like, we are jumping all over the place here, but what was your first pick to make you go the Soul Tie self mill?
I'll go get my deck. I've got
oh, it was no, okay, come on, we gave you heaps of time to work it out.
Isaac was telling a story the whole time.
Yeah, I'm sure exactly. That's plenty of time then.
it was Sandstep Mastodon. That was what I first picked.
Yeah, what's that for those like me who got no idea? Is it that big green thing?
It is. It costs 5. It is the biggest big green thing. It costs 5 green, and it's a 5/5 with rage. And when it enters the battlefield, you bolster 5.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Cool. And I actually read the article against PJ, and you actually won a match with that. You bolstered your...
My Gurmag Angler.
That's the one, yes.
Whacked him for 10. Yeah, it was a bit unfortunate. I was still... Going into the last round of draft one, I was still at X1, so I only needed like one win to lock up top 8. And I lost the last round of that draft, and then I lost the first round of the second draft, which meant that I would have to win the last two rounds unless something crazy happened with my breakers. And then I got paired against PJ, and he was in the same position, so it was pretty unlucky that we got faced there.
How are you feeling when you made top 8? It's your second one in two top 8s in a row?
Yeah, It was very exciting. I don't know. It still doesn't feel real, really. It's one of those things that takes a while to sink in. Like, I think like a year ago, I had no top 8s, and I was sort of desperately trying to get one and get back on the Pro Tour. And yeah, it's been a good year.
For sure, man. Did you like have an overwhelming desire to like call your mum and tell her that you top 8 it again?
I did, and you'll know that because I went up and asked to use your phone. So I could call my girlfriend. Let them know. Because I always sort of get home from events, and I'll check my phone, and I'll have like some messages from my girlfriend or whatever, and she'll be like, "Oh, how are you going?" And you know, give me updates and stuff, and yeah, like Magic events are just so engrossing and draining and stuff that I don't even eat at Magic events. I don't have time to do anything other than play Magic and drink copious amounts of water.
Wunshin actually sent me a message because, like I told you, that my phone cost me $5 a day to use it. So I was like, no dice, you can't use my phone. And later on, when you were in the top 8, Wunshin wanted updates on what was going on because the internet wasn't providing them fast enough. So she messaged me asking me for updates, and I refused to reply because it was going to cost me $5.
I must admit, it was really weird. For those of us still in Australia trying to get updates of the GP Auckland, nobody was on Facebook, nobody was on Twitter, nobody was doing anything. So it was really hard for us to get any sort of updates. It wasn't until I actually remembered that Watsy actually has a site that does these things. And but it just so happened that when I logged on, that's when I found out that you actually made the final. Who was your opponent in the final? It was a Japanese fella.
It was a Japanese fella. He spoke very little English, yeah.
Right. And what do we know about him first? He'd already won a GP before, hadn't he?
I had no idea.
I think he'd won GP Kobe or something like that, or if I remember, one of the Japanese GPs previously.
Cool. Very impressive.
So obviously you didn't know who he was.
No.
Obviously there's no pressure then, feeling that you're up against a top opponent. But what were your thoughts going into the final?
Well, I knew that he was I'd played him before in the Swiss. I actually played like five of the other people in the top eight in the Swiss. And so I knew he was good. And I was happy that he won his semi-final, though, because John's deck, who he beat, I don't think my deck could have beaten at all. So I was glad to be facing him. But yeah, the finals definitely didn't go incredibly well.
No, why's that?
He lost.
I know he lost, but when you say it didn't go well, does that mean he just beat you pretty decisively and quickly?
He's in about 2 minutes. Game one, I kept a bit of an awkward six, but it had some powerful stuff, and I just sort of didn't. I needed him to sort of have a bit of a slower draw, and I didn't draw my lands on time and died very fast. And then game two, I had a very good hand because I was a very slow, control-y Abzan deck and with no win conditions at all, and he was a very fast, aggressive Mardu deck. And so game two, my hand was two lands, Typhoid Rats, Sultai Emissary, and some other good like 4 and 5 drops, which is the nuts. It was fantastic, but I didn't draw a land and lost in a similarly quick amount of time.
Sorry, I'm just looking at the profiles here. Yeah, GP Kobe, 2014 champion.
Very good.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the top eight now. It's great to see Jason Chung back there, establishing himself as the best player in New Zealand once again. He's had a fantastic year.
He certainly has. He had a great finish at the PT, and I'm going to be very excited to get to hang with him again in Vancouver, and hopefully he does well at Brussels.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about that. You were at the last PT where PJ and Jason finished quite well. Where did Jason finish again?
He was 11th, I believe, and PJ was 23rd, I think.
All right. Was Jason ever in contention for a top eight?
He was very live. I left our, because I slept in that morning, and I left our hotel thinking that he was going to top eight and got there. And because he was like, yeah, obviously 11th, he was like one win off.
Wow.
And yeah, it was unfortunately not quite to be.
How did you finish at the last Pro Tour?
I went 2-1 in the draft and then proceeded to not win a match at Modern.
Really?
What were you playing in Modern?
Abzan, which is what most of us were playing. Yeah, I think I got a bit unlucky with the matchups that I had and my draws in those matchups, but also we definitely, I prepared a lot for Limited, and I was very ready for Limited. I was really happy with my Limited prep, but our constructed prep could have been a lot better, and that was partially because some of the Australians were staying in one place and some were staying in the other, and that made it difficult to do sort of cohesive testing and yeah, arrive at a point where I was happy with the format.
How many Tasiga did you end up playing?
We played 4. I think playing any less than 4 was a madman.
Yeah, fair. And what did you do with those Tasigas at the end of the tournament?
I sold them.
You sold them? I went to Maitland 7 Tasiga before he left, and he gave them to Wolfie. And Wolfie's like, yeah, here's the 5 Tasiga that Maitland gave me. Nobody really knows what happened to the other two, but Wolfie's with me.
What can you learn from the last Pro Tour with your preparation to make things better for the next one? When is the next one?
It is August 22nd or so, I believe.
Which, interestingly, this regional PDQ that's coming up also qualifies for Vancouver, and you were qualified for the regional PDQ, but you're not allowed to play it anymore. Is that right?
Yes, I actually got a response from Wizards today because I emailed them and asked if I was able to defer the invite to the next RPTQ or if I was able to at least get my Foil Liliana or whatever from the event, and they told me that I was not allowed to do anything to do with the RPTQ at all.
Top 8 profiles, player profiles. It's, in my opinion, pretty good if you can manage to sneak in a sneaky troll in there. And I did notice that when they ask you where are you from, you managed to sneak in there that you hail from the swamp. Is that right?
I did manage to slip that way. They are very, the questions don't really lend themselves to being funny. They're, you've really got to work for it, yeah.
And Jason Chung also managed to sneak a couple of answers in there, alluding to how everybody thinks that he is Juzza.
I actually, in round 9 on day 1, I looked at the pairings board and was like, oh no, I've got to play Juzza. And then I went back to look at the table and realized it was actually Jason that I was playing.
You are our first guest from Tasmania. What's the magic scene like down there?
It's getting better. We had a new store open up recently, a GG's in Hobart, and that's been really good for the community. Hopefully that can start getting us a couple more PPTQs per season, which would be good, get a few more. Because one of the biggest things is obviously having good events and then good people to play at those events. And getting good events is the best way to start getting better people.
So, do you actually live down near Hobart? Because I was under the impression that you actually live to the north of Tassie.
Well, I live in Hobart, and I'm like renting a place down there, but I'm currently working in Launceston, yeah, because that was the only place I could find work.
When are you going to be called Mainland Cameron? When are you moving to Melbourne?
I thought you were going to ask me how many players there were at the PPTQ that I won.
I heard that there were 8. Is that true?
There was a savage rumor going around that there was only 7, but yes, it was. It was a cut to top 8. There were 8 players. And it was fantastic. I was out of there in 3 hours.
You're not allowed to run it with 7.
Yeah, exactly.
So those people are scum for making such a rude rumor.
Well,
so I'll put my foot down. Shut up. Leave Cameron alone.
I actually messaged or emailed the lass who is, I hope, in charge of making such decisions about possibly getting a transfer to the Melbourne office yesterday. So hopefully something could come from that.
You did graduate from uni last year. Engineering, that's correct?
Yeah.
How's the working life been for you?
Maybe it was the year before last. I don't know. I've been unemployed for a long time. There's not a lot of work going in Tasmania, actually. It's pretty bad.
Maitland, you also engage in a fair bit of streaming. Tell us about that. Like, what's it? If people want to watch you stream and just watch you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way is to follow me on Twitch _Maiton_ is, I don't know how the URL works. My name is Maiton with an underscore after it.
Maiton with an L?
Maiton.
Maiton, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
And yeah, I haven't been streaming recently because I'm up north now, the internet's really bad up here and I'm unable to stream, but hopefully I can move to Melbourne or get something sorted out up here and start again soon, because I really enjoy it. It's really fun.
What made you get into it?
Well, as Avacyn Restored came out, I sort of stopped playing Magic pretty much completely for a while. And then one of my friends in Hobart sort of got me back into it around Dragon's Maze. And he'd sort of come over and we'd play. And we'd just like sort of hook my laptop up to the TV and play on that. And it was really fun. And then we just sort of had a webcam and, you know, streaming was getting pretty popular. So we thought we'd try that. And it just sort of took off from there.
Cool. How many followers do you have? Like, how many people typically watch one of your streams?
Typically, I think I get between like 1 and 200, depending on what time of day it is and stuff. And there's a lot of factors like that can really affect it. And I've got over 900 followers.
Nice. I noticed that your nickname is Dead Money, which I've never really quite understood. Why is your nickname Dead Money?
That was bestowed upon me by one Chester Swords. After I played against him at Nationals, and he would say that I made infinite play mistakes. I think I made slightly less than infinite play mistakes. I definitely missed AJ Mage Trigger. And he coined me dead money after that, which I believe is a poker term. It's stuck in the sense that Chester says it about 500 times every time he sees me.
But you are Chester Swords.
Talking of Nationals, it was mentioned earlier that in 2010 you finished third at Nats. Was that your first big finish?
Yeah, it was definitely my first. I hadn't been playing for very long at the time, so it was a very sort of like whirlwind from, you know, playing on the kitchen table to playing on the Pro Tour sort of journey.
Is that the one that you like stayed at my place for like a week and tested for with Aaron Nicol?
Yeah, that was for Worlds, yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
Graciously hosted us.
That was good times.
It was very good times, yeah.
How did you finish at that Worlds?
I think I was like 200th or something. Very sort of middle of the... I think my end record was like 9-9.
How old would have you been?
Maybe 21, yeah.
And how many Pro Tours have you been to now? Like,
we've already asked this question, Rob. Great to see that you've been listening.
Yeah, I haven't been to any Pro Tours in between the start of this podcast and the point we're in now.
Take that, Rob.
So Vancouver's going to be your third, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, it should be really good. Hopefully, I think the top four from the regional PTQ was like Isaac, Jim Wilkes, Ty Sowens, and someone else who I'm forgetting. So we should have a really good team.
Yeah, I think Juzza is playing in it as well. So, gets his auto invite. And Rangor is going to be finished writing this article that he's currently typing away on.
Oh, I thought I muted myself. Sorry. saying that my store's not going to be open till 1 p.m. tomorrow.
But yeah, we've already got Jason Chung, who's silver level, and PJ, who's also silver level, that are going to be going to Vancouver. So the team's already shaping up pretty well.
Yeah, sweet.
I heard before that you did a podcast with James Fazzolari and Joel Silvestri. Were you...
Josh Silvestri.
No, I've written Joel Silvestri. I'm pretty sure it's Joel Silvestri.
His name is what I say it is.
I was just a guest, and I sort of talked to Josh a bit afterwards, and he said that it was really good having me on, and like having a third person on sort of made it the opinions a bit more varied and made it a bit more lively and interesting. We talked about doing an extra one, but I think Josh is a bit busy with judging and writing articles and stuff, and that didn't end up happening, unfortunately, but it was good fun, and it was interesting because we actually did the whole thing in one take, which I'm starting to realize isn't the norm for podcasts.
I don't know what you mean.
that's
impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Let's just briefly talk about Pines for Planeswalkers. That was actually one of the cool things about the GP. We managed to sponsor a few people to go over. So we got Ray Barker there. We got Adam Yob. We paid for half of Ty Sowens' flights, and just at the last minute, David Mines was about to bail because the flight prices went up, and he didn't have quite enough, so we ended up chipping him the extra $100 or so, $120 to make sure he got there. So there's definitely Planes for Planeswalkers, which is just a charity to help people get to events. Managed to get a few people there, and Adam Yob actually managed to top 64, so that was pretty cool. Everyone was really, really appreciative, and you know, like donating cards and stuff that they'd won, and like, you know, from their sealed, and like donating their playmats and everything like that. So yeah, it was really great to see the you know, the community just get together and help a couple of guys get over to the GP and play some Magic.
Yeah, that was awesome. Do we want to talk a little bit about maybe the goal for the Sydney one? Because I've started a little bit on that already.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Do you want to tell us about it, Ringo?
Yeah, so a lot of people listening to our show, I think we've spoken before about Jamie Jackway, who was a player who did reasonably well in nationals and then had an accident where he fell from a helicopter while rescuing other people. I don't know the details if we're wrong, okay, but this is the base level and damaged his spine. Now, he hasn't been to an event since, but he plays some moto and stuff like that. So we're going to try and get donations and do what we can to bring him to Sydney. It's a big job and we're going to need a lot of help from everybody. Because like we have to get a hoist and a special car, and he'll need access to playing a bed for some time because he can't sit in a chair for more than a few hours at a time without creating sores on his body. So there's like a lot of details like that that we have to work on.
It sounds like an amazing thing to, you know, help somebody out that you know, he got into the accident while rescuing people, like, you know, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, so the Games Den have started Charity Board Games Day, which our first one is in April. And the first charity is RAX, which is my partner's charity. But the second board game day is going to, all donations will go to Jamie, to the Plans for Planeswalkers. That'll be May, the second Sunday in May. We'll be having entries, $10, and you come along and play board games, and all money goes to the Jamie Jackway getting to Sydney.
Also, something that does need to be said, Rob, CJ, you are the one that came up with the original idea, and more importantly, the name Planes for Planes.
It's a shit idea. No one ever gets behind it.
That is what Rango and I said in response to Rob suggesting it. And then one day I just magically came up with the idea on my own. Put it out there. And Rob was like, you dickhead. I came up with this idea ages ago. You told me it was stupid. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Well, it worked out.
Your head is fantastic like that. You tell you something, and once you forget where it came from, it's all right.
Yeah, so that's pretty awesome. I really enjoyed Auckland. I thought it was a great weekend. Had a lot of fun with a bunch of people, so...
Any shenanigans over there?
I got so messed up. Dude, I ate so much Carl Jr. and I was so messed up.
Ate so much what?
It's like a burger joint there.
Basically, they get all the fat out of a Big Mac and make a burger out of it.
Gross.
That's actually their official advertisement.
All the fat of a Big Mac in one burger.
Yeah. Oh, no, they used 4 Big Macs to create one of their burgers.
Okay.
So good. Yeah, it was great. It was really fun. I got to catch up with a bunch of people. There was a heap of people saying, when are Wizards of Oz doing the next episode? And I kept trying to tell them to go and ask Isaac. But I don't know if any did. I was pretty messed up.
I don't know if you did tell anyone to do that.
No, I did.
Rango's just in the corner by himself talking to the wall saying, you should go ask Isaac.
Leave me alone.
That's also believable too. That there was one stage where we were sitting upstairs on our own, just me and Ty, and no, actually, don't worry about that. Let's just cut that. I'm not talking about that.
One thing that was pretty cool, which I hadn't seen before, was instead of just boosters as prizes, there was like a prize wall and you got tickets. So like, you know, like whenever you won an event, you got a certain number of tickets. Yeah. And then you could use those tickets. Like one ticket could get you one booster pack, and you could choose your booster pack, or you could spend 4 tickets to get a Modern Masters booster. Or there's like 72 tickets got you like a big Grizzle brand, and then there was like a foil sheet, and there was some other stuff. It was pretty cool. It was like a really diverse way of doing the prizes, so that you know, you didn't just walk away with whatever boosters they gave you. You could actually choose what you got, which I thought was really cool.
And it worked well.
Yeah, it was pretty good by all accounts. I did a lot of trading for tickets, which was really cool for me. It meant that I could trade for certain things that I wanted that I don't normally have access to.
Right.
So that was pretty cool. The only tough side was, like, obviously there's a limited amount of Modern Masters boosters. So they like ran out, which then meant that if you won an event on Sunday, yep, your tickets weren't quite as good as if you won on Saturday.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not really something that is Lindsay's fault. There's not much he can do about that. We discussed that maybe the tickets on Sunday, or you get in like Sunday evening ones, maybe the tickets give you a little more because you've got the leftovers of what people don't want or something. So he's pretty open to suggestions as well. So yeah, it was pretty good.
Because that idea was taken from GPs in America from last year. They were doing that. And the same sort of issues arose there, and people complained that on the Sunday, they just weren't getting the prizes that they wanted.
Yeah, they had the same sort of system for GP San Jose, which we played in, and it was really good. Yeah, because I don't draft much and stuff in real life. So normally when I do like side events and stuff, I end up with a heap of boosters that just sort of sit around in my room, and so it was nice to be able to get like play mats and stuff that I can actually sell easier or keep or whatever. And I don't know about, like, you know, whinging that you can't get Modern Masters boosters or whatever, because, like, the alternative is they just, you know, what they used to do was just give out boosters as prizes, so, and you can still buy Fate Reforged boosters, so.
Yeah, but there were no playmats after 4 p.m. either, because, like, they were bought out by people trading for them. It's not just the Modern Masters boosters. There were, like, a lot of things. At the end, for the last, the last events on Sunday, your prizes were, like, Fate Reforged boosters. Like, boosters were kind of all that was left.
Sure, that's fair.
Yeah, that's still better than what it was before.
Yeah, like before it just would have been boosters on day one as well. So I think it's a good system.
It would have sucked for you though, Maitland, because you won one of the last prizes and you would have won like $2,000 worth of tickets. So what would have you spent with yours?
I think you're serious.
No, I'm not.
Well, what did suck was that while we were playing the finals of the GP, the top eight of the Super Sunday series was also happening, and there were about three times as many, maybe even four times as many people watching that as the finals of the GP, like the whole top eight of the GP, which was bizarre. So I'd be in like the middle of my semi-finals match, just sort of like, you know, concentrate everyone around, sort of dead quiet, and then there'd be a massive eruption of applause from 5 meters away, because that was where they were playing the Super Sunday series.
It was a little harder to get into where you guys were, though.
Yeah, it was
much easier. The reason it happened like that is because we could just stand next to the Super Sunday table and watch.
Yeah, I really don't agree with how they set up the thing. Like, no one could watch the top eight draft.
Yeah.
Which is just, yeah, I think it was completely unnecessary to have all those barricades and stuff up, and it sort of, yeah, it sort of ruined it a bit, but...
Well, it's to make sure you don't, like, slip any cards in your pool or something, right?
It's more about one person, like, recording every single card that, like, you know, Jason drafted, for instance, and then Maitland go into the toilet and he gives him, this is the list of cards that's in Jason Chung's deck. So sure, now you have his deck list, effectively. So that's what they're trying to prevent, but the result is really no one can watch. For spectators. Yeah,
which is why everyone just watched like the Super Sunday. There's no rule. There's nothing. So everyone's just standing there watching.
Well, we've got the new set coming out, which means that there'll be a post by the points committee of Highlander. Any sort of changes that we should be expecting?
You can wait like the rest of the paper.
Well, what's been discussed? You don't have to tell us exactly. Put in some red herrings. I don't know.
Come on, man. I've got a Channel Fireball store open right now.
Yeah. Mox has still been discussed. I still think that they need to go down points.
Yeah, they're not going to.
So is the Highlander committee discussing the 0.5 system?
Not in our most... We just recently finished a big discussion of points, and the idea of 0.5 cards did not come up, but it is something that we're going to have to, we're definitely going to go over and discuss. The idea of 0.5 system, we're going to open up the discussion about whether it should be a 10-point list again, but generally speaking, we're pretty happy with the list where it is at the moment, but we're definitely broadening. There's a fair few more cards that have added on to the we have like a watch list where we're just, you know, watching them, seeing how they're going. But at the moment, I think that we're pretty happy with the points list is, and we think that the people can metagame for what's good at the moment. So I don't think that there's been enough time for people to acknowledge what's good and then build decks that beat those decks. So we're pretty confident at where we are with the list. And then, we're still always discussing and we'll see how Dragon's cards affect it as well.
Well, I want to see Moxes go down. Just to see how it goes, even if it's just for a season or two. They're not being played at the moment.
Yeah, look, you're not wrong. They don't really see much play. The problem was that at 2 points, they saw a lot of play. And at 3 points, they see zero play. So that's a reason for the 0.5.
Yep.
So
I don't think that. Like, even at 2 points, people say, oh, they'll throw three Moxes in. But that's not true because everyone's still going to be playing Skullclamp. So that's only room for two Mox, which are good to, you know, beginning of the game. But late game, they're terrible.
Yep.
But I don't know. I feel like Moxes are just sort of so good at the beginning of the game that they basically have, you know, like a negative effect, and they're not really like the Moxes never really make games interesting or anything. They just sort of give you a free time walk. I don't mind people not playing Moxes at all. Basically, is my opinion.
Yeah, Maitland sounds pretty smart. Like, yeah, I mean, like, it's not like you like the games where somebody beats you because they go. Turn one, Wind, Mox, Curd Ape, Worm Wine. It doesn't really feel good. You know? So it's not like the format is missing out because Moxes are at three rather than two. But that being said, yeah, I definitely also hear what you're saying about the idea of testing something like that and seeing how it goes.
The last time I actually played Highlander sort of competitively in a league was when you're allowed to play Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time without them being pointed. And it was a delight.
Don't get started on Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time. I'm still pissed off about them both getting points.
We were discussing the possibility of one of them getting another point, but...
No!
And at this point, we don't think that that's appropriate, but... Like,
good. The cards have to hurt you.
The cards are very good, okay? Like,
I know. That's what I play.
Yeah, those cards are very good.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that wraps it up with Maitland Cameron. Thanks very much for coming on the show. Congratulations once again for your second place in GP Auckland. Hopefully I can join you in Vancouver. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Had a good time. Hope I was somewhat entertaining, and I also hope that you can join me in Vancouver.
For sure. We can be dead money together.
Yeah.
Okay, also today we have James the Faz Fazzolari. For those that don't know, the Faz was DQ'd from GP Auckland, and there's a lot of talk on the internet about what happened, so we thought we'd go right to the source and get Faz on to tell us ourselves. Thanks for accepting our invitation, Faz.
Thanks for having me on here, and I appreciate the invite to Wizards of Oz. Shame my first time on the show couldn't have been under better circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. Do you mind telling our audience exactly what happened?
Yeah, sure. I think everyone needs to know. So at round four of Grand Prix Auckland, I was paired against a good friend of mine, Matt Rogers from New Zealand, and I made a conscious decision to hide a Wispward Elemental in my lap to try and draw it at opportune times against him. I did this in game one. Matt noticed and informed the judge, and that led to an investigation that resulted in a disqualification from the event. At first, I denied that to sort of everyone who asked me about it for a full day, but after that, like the day afterwards, I sort of owned up to what I'd done and, you know, notified the head judge, notified Channel Fireball and sort of everyone else.
So I think what a lot of people want to know now is, like, why?
Yeah, so I think that's a really good question. It's something I've reflected on a lot in the last 5 days or whatever, as you can imagine, because I don't like to think of myself as a cheater, and I don't like to think of myself as someone who would betray a friend. So it's sort of like, I guess the best way for me to explain it all is to like give you a look into my life over the last 6 months. So as I guess most people listening to this would know, I used to be a Channel Fireball player. So I was a sponsored Magic player, and I think one of the only sponsored Magic players in Australia. And some people are really capable of dealing with public attention and the potential for greatness. I've not really had that sort of opportunity before, and so for the last year as a public figure, it came with this enormous amount of pressure and expectation from others and from myself and people around me, and I just didn't really have the experience or tools or maturity to deal with that. So my experience for the entire time that I played public Magic was that everyone wants something from you, but no one gives a shit about you. So people want your time and your ideas and your input, but they don't care about you, and you're just this like emotionless, personality-less figure that you're there for them to take advantage of. And people want you to fail, so they want to get everything they can from you, but they also want to beat you and tell people that they beat you. And so I've been grinding all this Magic and trying really hard to, you know, meet people's expectations, because, you know, every event I didn't win, people would tell me I didn't win, and it was a big deal that I didn't win, or every mistake I made was this huge thing, and I wasn't allowed to fail, and I internalized that and didn't give myself the opportunity to fail. So Isaac knows me pretty well and knows the sort of like time and energy I've been putting into trying to win events and qualify and work on decks and work with people to test. And it was just like every night of the week, so 5 week nights and then 2 days every weekend for 6 months was my life. And the thing is, when you're not winning, it doesn't matter. And I was starting to have problems sleeping. I wasn't eating properly. I wasn't talking to my friends. All I would do is play Magic. I'd come home, test Magic. I'd work on decks, and then on the weekend I would, you know, travel an hour to go to an event, play all day, make the top eight, lose, and then come home for an hour and sleep, and then go back to work and start all over again. And by the time of Auckland, I was like so burned out and so depressed, and I just needed it to be over, and I needed people to stop talking, and I needed to prove myself. Like I'd stopped, the game's not fun. The game wasn't fun anymore, and I just needed to put up a result that would prove to myself and shut people up. And I mean, none of it makes sense when you speak about it logically, but I just was done with the game, I guess. Yeah.
So with everything you've just mentioned then, and like I'm sure Isaac and Rob are feeling it too, we're sort of brought into your story, and it's taking a bit of a toll on us too. But you're speaking a lot in the past tense, almost like it's a relief that you're through this now. So now that you're obviously pending suspension, and
yep.
I'm sure our viewers know you're at Channel Fireball, you're not writing for them anymore. Do you feel like this has helped, like it's relieved some of the stress? Because it sounds like you were leading into quite a deep depression hole, but you're talking now like a past presence. I'm wondering, do you feel
it goes into
a little ways, better?
Look, these last 4 days have been four of the worst days of my life. So the first thing that happened was I got DQ'd, and then I went like back to the room that we were sharing and cried for 2 days in bed and couldn't face anybody. And I was so scared of my friends and what I'd done to them that I was trying to organize flights to flee the country. Cause I was just so terrified of talking to them and owning up to them. And then the next thing that happened was I got a phone call from my parents, who I very rarely speak to, because they knew I'd flown to Auckland to compete, and they were calling me up to ask why I'd been disqualified for cheating and telling me how disappointed they were in me. And then fast forward to Tuesday when I went into work, people at work that had known I was going to Auckland to play had looked up the results and knew what had happened. So I had to explain myself to people at work. Couple that with, so many people that I, are friends of mine, but are understandably very, very hurt and have turned their back on me and don't want anything to do with me in person. And then people online, I've had so many messages from people telling me that, I was an idol to them or someone they looked up to and I failed them and how could I, or worse, people telling me to kill myself. So the last few days have been really bad, but I think beyond that, the suspension is going to be really healthy for me. My relationship with the game is not good. It's not fun. I don't enjoy playing Magic and I haven't enjoyed playing Magic for a long time. And I think forced time away from the game to take stock and focus on other areas of my life is going to be really good. Like I have really close friends that I've seen one or two times in the last year or so because I've been at Magic events every weekend. My health has really suffered. I have chronic back pain and sleeping problems because of Magic now. So maybe I can fix those. And if I come back to the game, hopefully it'll be in a much more healthy way.
I think there's no place out there at all for anyone to tell anyone to go, hurt themselves like they have. So the internet's a horrible place, but
I mean, the world of trolls out there are going to behave like fuckheads no matter what.
Yeah, so...
And to any of our viewers that have behaved like that, then perhaps you should be seeking advice yourself because you're probably mentally unstable and perhaps you should be looking at your own lives before harassing others.
But I hope as well that there are people out there who are listening to your story, James, and, finding out that there's no place out there for it. They've got nothing to gain by trying to gain an unfair advantage.
Yeah, so I'll tell you this much. I played competitive games. I started playing, attending tournaments in other games back when I was 10. And I know a lot of people wonder what that sort of lifestyle is like and, think it must be really great. It's the exact opposite of that. And Magic, more than really any other game I've played, the return on effort and what you'll get out of dedicating yourself to it is just, it doesn't match up. It's just, there's so much variance. So if you're like thinking of cheating or you're currently cheating or whatever your relationship with it is, I can't stress to you enough just how much it's not worth it. The financial gain isn't there. Trust me, I just lost a really, really, like, really good sponsorship for nothing. I've lost a lot of friends. And my health, and what did I get out of it? Nothing, like completely nothing. And even then, right, you're in Magic, people are so, their attention span is so short. Unless you're like a world-class player, you're only as good as your last result. So even if I'd done really well at Auckland, imagine, it wouldn't have meant anything. And it wouldn't have stopped people from talking or from talking down to me or expecting things from me. That's just not how it works. So it doesn't achieve anything, and it's certainly not going to make any problems you have in the game any better.
I think it's a relevant point to mention that, like, from a lot of what I'm hearing in this conversation is, like, a lot of it was to do with how you foresaw yourself and wanted to be foreseen by the public, or perhaps people should be maybe stepping away from caring what so-and-so nobody says or feels and play the game for yourself. So, like, there's a lot of good players. I've seen a lot of good players before that, like, will point out mistakes during the game that they could capitalize on because it's not how they want to win. Well, I think those sort of players are never going to end up in the wrong headspace to get to that point, where if your goals are orientated and then all this pressure comes, perhaps that's what's really pushed it.
Yeah, I'd say, everyone's a bit different and sort of people deal with things a bit differently. Like, I'm not the most socially capable person, and like, to be honest, being on here is really hard. Even if it was under like really good circumstances, it's really hard for me. But so like a lot of persons who are in my position might have like got a lot out of the public asking them questions or wanting to interact with them, whereas it was a real burden for me. That's just how I work. But in terms of like motivating to improve, it's like an individual thing. I always would prefer to work with one or two good friends, even if they weren't experts on a format or experts on a deck that I was working on, just because of like the closeness and the trust in that group. Whereas like other people, you know, work much better collaboratively with, or like they'll seek out certain persons that they might not know very well, but they know that they have valid input. So, I don't want to like say any wrong one way of approaching the game is incorrect. It's just the way that I was approaching the game didn't work for me.
Yeah. So what I wanted to ask is, do you think that there was, now that you've passed all this, any telltale signs to yourself that you may be heading down the wrong path? So if we've got a viewer out there that's maybe doing activities, do you think there's any triggers that you could say, hey, if you're doing this or thinking like this, perhaps you should take a step back?
Yeah. So I mean, I think like it's probably pretty obvious to people who are listening that I have a slew of mental health issues. So looking at it from that perspective, I was very aware for a long time that I was not enjoying playing the game, and I did nothing about it. And I know I told people about it, but no one really, you know, it's very hard for people to hear you say that and then see all the time and effort you're putting in and go, oh, okay, he's really serious that he's not enjoying himself and things are wrong. But I knew in my heart and in my mind that I was really starting to hate the game and the lifestyle. And if you're even starting to go down that path, you need to stop, because it's a game, and you know, games are meant to be enjoyed, and there have to be positive reasons why you're involved in the game, whether it be friends or a personal challenge, or you know, if you're a Johnny expressing your creativity, you need to find reasons to enjoy the game. And if you're not enjoying it, go do something else. But I mean, that's the first thing. And I guess the next thing is like, you need to think about what your priorities are in the game. My priorities have never been like winning at all costs. My priorities have always been getting better and improving as a deck builder or improving as a player. But you know, towards the end and just before Auckland, my priorities did change, and it was literally just about, I mean, finally having a result and finally shutting people up. And like, when that's the case, you're no longer playing for yourself and for good reasons. You know, playing to prove yourself to random people on the internet isn't healthy. So I don't know if any of that sort of stuff is starting to go through your head, you know, talk to people around you, seek help. I've made a promise to a couple of close friends in the Magic community that I'm going to start getting, you know, psychological treatment to deal with my issues, which, you know, I never really bothered to do before, but now I have all this time, so I can. You know, like, if you're not enjoying yourself, or you know, that's when you need to do something about it.
So you mentioned that you're gonna seek some psychological help, which I think is, you know, just really great. I think that it's really underrated, and you know, something that more Magic players should realize, that mental health is something that should be talked about, you know, far more openly. We've had a bunch of people ask some questions about, you know, whether this has happened in the past and that kind of thing, but personally, I think it's more important for us now to really, you know, realize that this has happened and focus on the future. And so I know you've already mentioned that you're going to seek some psychological help. Is there other things, like what other plans do you have going forward? Like, you know, like, do you plan to come back to the game? What do you plan to do whilst you're away?
What
steps are you going to take to make sure, you know, that you're in a better place when you do come back?
I mean, I'll be very honest with you. I don't know if I'll be back. I had to play a league match last night at Good Games Melbourne in the city. And it was, again, you know, it's a store that I go to all the time. And my opponent was a friend of mine that, you know, I talked to all the time and knew what had happened. And so even in a place of comfort against someone that I know, I had, like, anxiety just going into the store, and I had to, like, psych myself into going inside. And then I was so nervous and so jittery and shaky throughout the match that I could, like, barely concentrate. And I didn't have any fun at all. And yeah, maybe that will go away, but maybe it won't. And maybe I'll never feel comfortable playing again. And like, that's something I've done to myself. What if that's the case? You know, like I've just discussed, it's about having a positive relationship with the game and enjoying yourself. And if I'm not, in 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, I don't know when the suspension will end, when I come back, if I'm not going to have fun, then I just won't come back. And which is really unfortunate, because I have made a lot of good friends in the community and a lot of people that I really like. And, you know, the Melbourne community is full of a lot of really great persons, and it may be that I have thrown that all away. In terms of fixing up the rest of my life, this is really like a really big wake-up call. It's a huge slap in the face that the lifestyle that I've been living isn't going to work long-term. And now, thankfully, someone has stepped in externally and put a stop to that. So I think it's going to be a lot about getting to grips with what makes me happy as a person and working on those issues, because like I haven't been internally happy in more than a decade. And I think I'm not going to be happy doing anything until that's fixed. And if I can come back to the game from a place of happiness where it doesn't matter if I win, or it doesn't matter if I lose, and it doesn't matter if someone likes me, or it doesn't matter if, you know, people want to talk shit to me because, you know, I am internally happy, then I don't think I'll have those same flaws or, you know, eventually end up in a position where I feel like I need to cheat again.
I think that's a really positive way of looking at it. Is there anything else that you want to say, James?
I would like to just take a moment to, I guess, apologize to Matt Rogers. I know we've spoken away from the show, but, you know, just to public knowledge that he is a good friend of mine and I betrayed him. To my friends in the Melbourne community who, you know, as much as I can be a total prick and impossible to deal with, have really become close friends of mine and put up with everything, all my mood swings and all the problems that I've caused, and, you know, now this on top of everything else. But they've taken me in and been really good to me. To Channel Firewall, who was an incredible sponsor and like a second family, and I'm very sorry that I dragged your name through the dirt, and thank you again for the really positive way that you took the news and wished me all the best and hoped I got better. And you know, to my friends and family and really, I guess, oddly enough to say to my fans that I've let down to, I'm uncomfortable with the amount of expectation that you all had of me, but nevertheless, I thank you all greatly for the messages and the support at times, and I'm very sorry that I let you all down.
Well, thank you, James. And I just hope everyone out there as well looks at all the positives that you've contributed towards the community. You know, you have had a lot of successes as well, including representing Australia. So time will tell, and but good luck with it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I just quickly, I want to say, if, you know, any of our listeners out there are experiencing mental health problems, that it's pretty easy to, you know, if you're in crisis, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Or alternatively, if you're not necessarily in crisis, but you still want to seek some psychological help, one of the best things you can do is just see your GP. Your GP can organize a mental health plan, and they can get you in contact with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and you can get 10 visits through Medicare. And I can't stress how important mental health is. So, you know, if you're in a in a bad place, then, you know, do something about it. And, you know, if you've got a friend that's in a bad place, you know, encourage them to seek help because it's really important.
Thanks, James.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for
having me. My mic's muted.
You're talking,
I was
where?
Talking and then you're like, yeah, I was talking and you guys were like, thanks, see you later. I'm like, what the fuck?
Mailand!
Hey, how's it going?
What's your bag, yourself?
Pretty good.
So I just tried to search for you in Skype, and I couldn't find you.
That's because you're talking Cameron Maitland.
That is exactly why!